Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, committed to helping families across America pursue their college savings goals. On the web at putnam.com/529. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
A Nobel Prize in economics uniquely suited to our times. The budget deficit and alternative realities on the broadcast today, although not in the same story. And some texting while driving, although not in an actual car. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend, offering four sections of ideas and information available at newsstands every Saturday. And by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at progressive.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, today the 11th of October. Good to have you with us. We have been talking for, what, 2.5 years now about the labor market, about how lousy it is, about how hard it is to create new jobs, generally as if that labor market were a single coherent thing. The three men who won the Nobel Prize in economics this morning beg to differ. Americans Peter Diamond from MIT, Dale Mortensen of Northwestern, and Christopher Pissarides of the London School of Economics. Their official citation reads, "For their analysis of markets with search frictions." In simpler terms, they explained why it is that we can have lots of unemployed workers and unfilled jobs, or plenty of people looking to buy a house and so many unsold homes all at the very same time. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
In a perfect economy, price would be determined by a simple equation of supply and demand. How many flat-screen TVs are for sale? How many people want them? Not enough buyers, price goes down. Not enough TVs, price goes up.
The starting point model that economists often talk about for supply and demand doesn't really say much about how buyers and sellers come together.
MIT economist Jim Peterba says what today's Nobel winners have described in complicated equations is the friction that gets between actual buyers and sellers, or employers and job seekers. It's all the added costs and complications of searching.
The notion that there is search and that search takes time, that people wait for the best offer they might be able to get, is a very important reality in many markets, housing markets, cars, or other things you might sell in auctions or on eBay, and in particular in the labor market.
And here's the problem with the job market that this search theory can help solve. How can there be so many people unemployed and yet still be so many employers advertising job openings they can't fill? Economist Mark Cooperberg at Swarthmore College says, imagine if the labor market were a produce market instead.
You don't see a lot of rotting tomatoes and rotting fish in produce markets, and yet you do see a lot of unemployed workers, especially now. The question is why? Why is it that the labor market does not seem to work as well in terms of allocating workers to jobs?
The models developed by today's Nobel winners explain the factors that get in the way of a market that efficiently matches workers and jobs. Factors like whether workers have the right job skills and people's difficulty selling a house right now and moving, and unemployment benefits that are sometimes higher than the low-wage jobs that are available. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The private equity firm Bain Capital did a little Columbus Day shopping today. They picked up the kid store Gymboree for $1.8 billion. That's a whole lot of activity classes and footy PJs, so we asked Marketplace's Elisa Roth to find out what makes the company worth a price like that.
Gymboree's biggest business is a middle to upper range kids clothing line. Think something like Gap Kids. But it also has a high end line and a relatively new lower end one that competes with places like Old Navy. Betty Chen follows Gymboree at Wedbush Securities. She says at some competitor stores, you get the feeling they've added kids' clothes just to make you spend more money there. She says investors like the idea that Gymboree is really all about the kids.
There's a little area for you to sit your kids down. They can watch educational program on TV so that you can shop in peace. And so it really tries to cater to the parents and the caregivers and making that shopping experience as easy as possible.
She says there are other things that make Gymboree attractive. The lower-end line is so new, there's lots of room to grow, and Gymboree recently started expanding overseas. The other thing is kids always need more clothes because they're constantly growing. Wendy Liebman is CEO of WSL Strategic Retail, which is a marketing and research firm. She says the kids' clothing business has been pretty recession-proof.
kids business in general, babies, kids, has been a business where parents have felt less inclined to cut back even in these tough times.
Gymboree has another month or so to solicit other offers, but if this deal goes through, it's expected to close by the end of the year. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
All right, so here's a question. Whatever happened to Microsoft? I mean, yes, it's got the computer operating system market pretty much cornered and office productivity tools like Word and Excel, but really, what's it done for you lately? That very question leads us to today's news. This morning, the company embarked on what analysts are calling its last chance to catch up in the world of smartphones. Their new mobile operating system is called Windows Phone 7. It's going to be on a number of different phones next month, serviced by AT&T and T-Mobile, at least to start. Marketplace Jeremy Hobson reports on exactly how successful that phone needs to be considered a success.
Windows Phone 7 looks kind of like an iPhone or a Droid, but it comes with Microsoft Office, and it's heavily integrated with Facebook, which Microsoft owns a piece of. It'll be available on Dell, Samsung, HTC, and LG phones here in the U.S., and it will be compatible with 60 carriers around the world.
The name of the game here is distribution, and the way to get that done is, number one, have a lot of handset partners out there, and number two, have a lot of carrier partners out there as well.
That's Ramon Lamas, a senior mobile analyst with IDC. He expects by the end of this year, Microsoft will bump up to 7% of the global market for smartphones from 5% today. That's well behind rivals Symbian, Apple, Google, and Research in Motion. But Jonathan Goldberg says it might be just enough. He's a wireless analyst with Deutsche Bank Securities.
They don't have to beat the iPhone this Christmas. They don't really have to beat Android. They don't have to outrun those very popular phones. All they have to do is outrun the Zune. They have to outrun their own history.
He's talking about Microsoft's portable media player, which lost popularity quickly after it was launched in 2006. Goldberg calls the new Windows Phone 7 a good product, but, he says,
consumers won't approach this in a vacuum. They'll approach it knowing that it's a Windows device and it's a Microsoft device. And I think for a lot of consumers, that's sort of a red flag. And they're going to have to get past that initial hesitation. Uh-oh, is this phone going to crash? Are we going to get the blue screen of death?
Goldberg says Microsoft is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on marketing to try and get consumers to look beyond those concerns. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Stick around. There's some more smartphone fun coming up at the end of the broadcast. But a correction now before we go any further about our Freakonomics radio segment last week. We were talking about the big drop in runs that we've been seeing in baseball. And we said pitchers are doing worse, and here's the key phrase, doing worse than in years past. The right answer is that pitchers are worse just this season over last season and only in the American League as well. On Wall Street today, not worse or better than any other day. Unchanged is the word. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. President Obama made another plug for his $50 billion infrastructure program today. That's the one that nobody in the White House wants to call an economic stimulus program, mostly because of all the political agita over how much the government ought to be spending to create new jobs and what that might do to the budget deficit. Commentator David Leonhardt says the whole conversation we're having about the deficit needs to change if we're going to get anywhere.
Let's face it. A lot of the talk about the deficit ends up being pretty vague. Politicians want to cut spending, but they don't say which spending. They want fundamental tax reform, but they don't explain how that will bring down the deficit. So here's a little rule. If you want to be taken seriously when you rail against the deficit, you need to support one of the following four policies. Better yet, support more than one. Ready for the four? 1. Cuts to Medicare. 2. Cuts to Social Security. 3. Military cuts. 4. Tax increases. Any budget expert will tell you that we simply cannot fix the deficit without doing at least one of those four. The Congressional Budget Office projects that by the year 2035, the annual deficit will be almost $2 trillion. Let's imagine that we make big cuts to every government program that's not on our list of the big four. Bigger cuts than Ronald Reagan made to things like education and transportation. How much money might that save? Only about $100 billion. You can even double that figure and assume truly radical cuts. Even then, you've saved a measly 10% of the projected deficit in the year 2035. The reason is that these programs make up only a modest share of government. The three biggest programs, by far, are Medicare, Social Security, and the military. But we can do something about those programs. We can clamp down on Medicare spending that hasn't been shown to make people healthier. We can raise the retirement age for Social Security. We can reduce wasteful military spending, though by itself that won't be enough. And we can definitely raise taxes. As a share of GDP, taxes are now at their lowest level since 1951. What we cannot do is just wish the deficit away. We've promised ourselves more government than we've paid for, and that can't continue. So which of the big four do you choose?
David Leonhardt writes the Economic Scene column for the New York Times. He's a staff writer at the Times Magazine as well. If you've got ideas for cutting the deficit, as David was talking about, give them a try on our website. We've got a budgeting game there. It's called Budget Hero. It's way more fun than it sounds, I promise. Marketplace.org. One of the greatest innovations in modern spectator sport was on display this weekend. You saw it if you happen to catch a football game at any point, those computer-generated yellow lines that mark first downs. They're a pretty basic form of a technology known as augmented reality. AR's been around for a while now, but Marketplace's Steve Henn reports it's going way beyond the football field.
Okay, so let's talk about those yellow lines. Anytime a computer layers graphics or audio over an image of your environment and displays it in real time, that's augmented reality, or AR. And it's not just on TV. Smartphones like the iPhone and Droid put all the technology needed to make augmented reality work into the pockets of millions. These phones can track location, and they have cameras and screens. And some of the slickest, most popular apps use this technology to create a clickable world. Mike Smithwick built the iPhone app Distant Suns.
One time when I was outside looking at the stars, I actually found myself reaching up to click on one of the real stars to find out what it was. About halfway up there, I thought, no, that doesn't work that way.
So Smithwick created an app that does.
Okay. So you turn it on, you turn on the compass, you hold it up to the sky.
So there is the moon right there, Sagittarius there, Pluto, the ex-planet Pluto.
You can click on Pluto and zoom in, or turn and face Jupiter.
Accelerate the clock and watch the moons whizzing around Jupiter.
Using AR to create an interactive guide to the heavens is just the beginning.
Augmented reality was right on the cusp of really entering into the mainstream.
Chris Cameron is an analyst at Read Write Web. He says the number of augmented reality apps is exploding. There are more than 500 now, everything from video games to tour guides. A year ago, there were just a handful.
Mobile's very important, and mobile's been the area of augmented reality that's been growing the fastest.
Big brands like Volkswagen and McDonald's are spending millions on ad campaigns using this technology. You can hold your phone up in the air and see the golden arches popping up over the horizon. You still see the street you're walking on through the camera of your phone, but you also see McDonald's virtual icon floating in space, leading you to the nearest quarter pounder. And Cameron says toy companies like Lego and Hasbro are catching on too.
Playtime is a really important sector, I think.
The hot toy this Christmas for the kid who has everything might just be the $300 AR drone. It's a remote control quadricopter. That's a helicopter with four propellers, and it's controlled with an iPhone. It takes off and lands with a touch of a button. It can spin in place, even track its location in a breeze, and stay still, hovering over one spot. But it's the AR, the augmented reality, that's really interesting. Two cameras mounted on the copter send real video to your iPhone, and the drone's processors then create a video game that seems to interact with and take place in the real world. So you can fly this drone through your living room and attack digital monsters lurking behind your couch. And Paul Saffo, a futurist at Stanford, thinks we're all about to start seeing the world this way, with digital images and information layered on top of our view. He thinks as cheap sensors are built into more and more objects, our phones will start talking to them. Already, there's an iPhone app that uses broadcast beacons on commercial airlines to identify the flight numbers and destinations of planes flying overhead.
Something that would have required an academic department and tens of thousands of dollars of Air Force money, you can now do for $5 as an app on your iPhone.
Sappho says augmented reality will let the World Wide Web break free of our computers and extend rich layers of information out into our physical world.
We're going from a world of interface to interaction, where we're having conversations with all the physical objects around us.
And they're answering back. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Radio's where it's at, if you ask me, but augmented reality is one of those things you've got to see to believe. We've got some great examples on our website. It's marketplace.org. Coming up, voice recognition software so you can text safely while driving.
Send message to Kai Rizdal. Send message to Karen.
Or, you know, maybe not. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials rose 3 points on this Monday. That's basically, flat. Closed at 11,010. The NASDAQ up less than a point. Also, flat. 2402. The S&P 500 gained a fraction of a point. Wait for it. Flat again. 1165 was the number. Bankers stayed home for the Columbus Day holiday, and they didn't really miss too much. J.P. Morgan Chase deposited 1%. Citigroup, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs each trimmed about 0.25%. We told you about Gymboree, the kids' clothing store, dressed up 22% today after Bain Capital said it would buy the company for a cool $1.8 billion. Harbin Electric Company powered up more than 16%. The CEO of the Chinese maker of linear motors, think printers and sorters and those kinds of things, wants to take the company private for $745 million. Bond markets, they were closed for the holiday. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Novo Nordisk, since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. Coverage of the economy is supported in part by the Schuman Center for Media and Democracy. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up tomorrow. The Consumer Energy Alliance holds its annual Energy Day on Capitol Hill. The United Nations calls October 12, 1999, the Day of 6 Billion. It estimates Earth's population reached the milestone around that time. And it's International Moment of Frustration Scream Day. Organizers encourage citizens to go outside and scream for 30 seconds at 1200 hours Greenwich time. Be sure to warm up your vocal cords first. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The standard American work week is a mostly manageable 40 hours. Every now and then, though, you got to put in some more time, whether it's straight up working extra hours or traveling for a meeting or a conference or to see a client. When you're away from home from work, sometimes you need a little extra something to get you going. That's the idea behind our series Road Warriors from producer Michael Rayfield. What people listen to when they're on the road and on the job. Today, some work travel that doesn't really sound all that bad.
I'm April Whitney. I'm the editor of Scoot Magazine, and part of my job is traveling around the country to different scooter rallies and events. And the one song that I bring with me wherever I go is 25 Miles by Edwin Starr.
It's funny that I would pick a song that's about walking when I'm thinking about riding my scooter, but it's really about a journey. He counts down the miles, so he says, I've got 10 more miles to go, and it's this call and response between him and the background singers. And I think about when I'm traveling to scooter rallies, I've got my truck loaded up with a scooter and magazines and all this stuff, and we're driving. And, you know, I've driven to Denver, I've driven to Mexico. So a lot of times you're looking at those signs, and whenever I see the sign that's 25 miles to my destination, I always think of the song and I want to put it on. When you're anticipating getting to where you want to go and it's going to be fun, it's going to be great, you count those miles down. And I think that's the similarity of this, that I'm either going to a scooter rally or sometimes I'm on a ride, like a three-hour ride with a bunch of people, hundreds of other scooterists. And it's the journey and getting there and the anticipation of where you're going to be when you finish. Thing about making a business out of your hobby is that sometimes you can get really bogged down with the boring minutia. Like, I'm concerned, you know, with advertising rates going down. Am I going to have enough money to print the next issue? How's my distribution doing? How are my subscriptions doing? What's resonating, right? There's all these, like, business things that bug me day in and day out. Sometimes I have to put that aside and not think about that stuff and really think about the core mission of what I'm doing, which is to share my enthusiasm from this hobby of mine with other people.
We've got a whole new music section on our website. You know, that's where you'll find a list of April's other favorites, and you can offer up your own suggestions as well. Marketplace.org. A couple of weeks ago, Massachusetts became the 30th state in the union to ban texting while driving. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood calls fiddling with your cell phone behind the wheel an epidemic, and he'd also like to see a national ban on it. Technology being what it is, though, there's a whole slew of new smartphone apps out there to help people curb their texting addictions. Hiawatha Bray is the technology reporter for the Boston Globe. We've gotten him on the line to see what works and what doesn't. Hiawatha, good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
So there are a bunch of different apps that help you not text while you're driving. Run down the list for me, would you?
Well, I think they fall into two basic categories. You got the kind that are designed to actually stop you, to make you stop using the phone
aggressively
when you're driving.
Too, right?
Absolutely.
With some emphasis.
And then there are the other ones, which I think are a little dicier, which are trying to help you find a way around it by allowing you to do it by talking into the phone and listening to incoming texts instead of pecking away on a screen or a keyboard.
Now, there is one of these that basically is an incentive program, right? It rewards you in a way for not texting and driving?
Yeah, it's called SafeCell app, and it's written by some people who really understand the problem here. These blocking programs that stop you from texting will only work if you voluntarily use them, and you can always turn them off. So they came up with a way to make you turn it on. They pay you. The idea is that when you turn it on, it blocks all the functions of your phone, but the GPS unit inside tracks how far you've driven. It keeps count of how many miles you've gone. Every 500 miles, you're entitled to a $5 gift card. The average American drives 12,000 miles a mm-hmm. year. If you do that, you're entitled to $120 worth of gifts just for turning this app on, which locks out your phone and keeps you from texting while driving.
All right. But if you absolutely have to positively text while you drive, there are some ways to do it at least moderately safely. I have actually borrowed my producer's iPhone because I don't actually let myself have one of those because I'd be playing with it all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We loaded up something called Vlingo. It's an app called Vlingo. Yep. And that's one of those that takes your voice and turns it into text, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to try it out. I've got this thing loaded up. I have unlocked her phone. Hiawatha Bray.
Aren't you supposed to say call?
I don't know. We'll try. Here we go. All right. So this is a problem because by now I've wrecked my car. If I'm driving with this thing, I've wrapped it around a telephone pole.
In fairness, you do have to learn a vocabulary. If you want to send a text, you have to say, send message to, or if you want to make a call, you say call, and then you give the number.
All right, well, here we go. Call Hiawatha Bray. No, I got Ella Bine or Burn, so we're not going to call her. We'll try it again.
Hang on. Let me try it with you. I'm going to see if I can get it to work on your end. Send message to Kai Rizdahl. Send message to Karen. It did indeed open up a text window. It just didn't send it to the right person.
By the way, just for the record, I'm like a trained radio professional, and this thing can't figure out my voice.
No, it gets worse. I've done this in a closed environment, and they work pretty well for me. But when you get in a car, all bets are off.
Oh, because road noise and all that other stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The future of this is an acoustic system that's built right into the car that can make allowances for all that. That's what Ford has with the sync technology.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that right now, they still haven't figured out a way to sync a lot of these functions on smartphones, including texting, with the Ford Sync technology. And Ford has basically been begging the cell phone industry, will you please make your Bluetooth profiles for your phone compatible with Sync so people can text with their voices? That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, so here's the thing, though. It occurs to me, Hiawatha and Kai are not in the common lexicon, right?
You got it, and that's part of the problem. They're very unusual names, and so that's one reason it's having trouble. But so what? I mean, the fact is, this shows the major limitations that still exist in speech recognition, especially with a handheld device that isn't the most powerful computer.
So the moral of the story is, not only should you not text while driving, you shouldn't really play with any of these applications that let you do voice to text while driving, because you'll kill yourself.
You shouldn't even call your mother. Just put the phone down and drive.
Hiawatha Bray, he's the technology reporter at the Boston Globe. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, seeking new ways to reduce the effects of market volatility for investors. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, you can file this one under Human Relations Horror Stories. The UK mobile phone company Everything Everywhere called its employees into a meeting not too long ago, showed them a light. Red meant you're fired. Yellow meant you had to reapply for your job. Blue, not green, but blue, meant you were safe. Apparently, people were walking out of the room, breaking down in tears, you name it. The company said everybody had been told face-to-face where possible, but still, kind of harsh, don't you think? Anyway, on a Monday, that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow bumped up 3 points, not quite a tenth of 1%. The NASDAQ edged up less than a point, flat. The S&P 500 gained a fraction of a point, again, flat. Our producers include Avishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Coming up next time on this broadcast, payday lending, making that dangerous borrowing cheap and safe.
Then you see where your money is going. And that's what a lot of us don't do. If we don't see it in black and white, it doesn't make sense.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.